You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
We seem to regularly see in New Zealand news stories about cultural oppression regarding dress standards. There's been numerous stories over the years from schools and workplaces. You might remember Air New Zealand not allowing tāmoko up until 2019. Just last week, Rāwhiti Waititi wore a taonga in Parliament, and just the other day, a Dunedin student was told his cornrows were too extreme. I wanted to understand this a little bit more, so I talked to Dr. Janet Tupor, a communication lecturer at AUT, about why it's important for minorities to be able to express their culture in their dress and appearance, what the underlying issues are, and why racism keeps popping up. I started off by asking her about the issues from the past week and the underlying issues.
And first of all, it's important to realise that this is not new territory. It's not just those two events that you've just spoken about that's come up. There was also a Cook Island student who I think was aged five, actually, was forced to cut his hair or to be forced to leave. This happened in, I think, Brisbane. There was also an example here more closer to home where it happened at Glenfield College, where a Pacifica student was forced, in other words, to cut his hair or to leave the premises, and it happens everywhere. So we first of all have to acknowledge that this type of, I guess, oppression or this type of, this type of activity and this behaviour is normal to an extent. But what's not normal is the people who are becoming victims of it slowly standing out and speaking their voice and becoming more assertive in challenging these archaic standards and just saying, hey, that might have been, you know, the rules written in 1991, but the world has changed. The face of Aotearoa is slowly changing, and we need to change these policies and rules along with it. Yeah.
And how do we speed up this process?
This process won't happen overnight, but I think the first step is to acknowledge that it happens. And that's often the first step, which is quite difficult. People refuse to acknowledge. They're still in a state of denial. It's quite a dangerous statement to say it's the way it's always been, or it's always been this particular way, or the rules have always been in place. If you don't like it, leave. That is one of the most dangerous and disheartening statements that any human can say, especially here in our backyard. So after acknowledging that, you know, things need to change, slowly people will begin to accept change. And as we all know, change is not easy. And it also comes against our own biases, whether they are cultural or personal, or whether they are, you know, professional. But when you start to accept that the climate and the, you know, people's cultures around you are changing, then you realize that actually it's in myself, it's my personal responsibility, it's my personal duty to be a better treaty partner and to advocate change, to create change. And it has to come from an individual level, so not just consciously, but also unconsciously as well, just realizing that as a human, as a person, it is your responsibility to realize that you can't hold these ethnocentric views that prevent other people from expressing their culture. For example, if I can give you my own example, I have three gold teeth. And I would be damned if the organizations that I work for were to say, Janet, we can't have you work for us because of your gold teeth. These gold teeth are an expression of my culture, of my heritage, and of my family. So again, the organization has to some extent got to put their hand up and be like, you know what, we can do better, and we are going to do better. We are first of all going to acknowledge the differences that are apparent in our society and in different cultures, and we're going to accept that we will, take on board these changes and also implement them.
And there have been some changes, but eight schools in New Zealand still are banning afros and braids. It's very othering. How are we still at this? How did we get to this point where this could, where an oppression of a culture could even be a thing in dress standards?
Yeah. I can't comment on, you know, the shorter stories without referring back to the longer stories. And the bigger stories at play here is colonization. And people don't like that word, but we learn about it in passing. But the colonization here is beginning to be very apparent in the way that schools, institutions, and organizations have been set up. So by decolonizing, you know, these particular spaces, we can then empower people, and the power really is in the collective and it is in the people. So I've been starting to see that a lot more, there's a lot of, you know, people that are starting to sign petitions. They're starting to actually come forward with these stories of, hey, that happened to me, or, you know, me too. So just getting these stories out there, actually, you know, it makes these gradual changes towards those two notions that I mentioned before of acknowledgement and also acceptance. And once people start to see the movement in the collective, people begin to double check their own biases and become aware of exactly, you know, how dangerous their oppressing or oppressive behaviors are. Because sometimes this comes from a place where it's very unconscious. It's just, unfortunately, it's just programmed in certain people from a young age, or it's the way that their parents or their grandparents have always been. So they carry that mentality or that type of behavior through to their adulthood and then begin to enforce them onto people who don't look or act the same as them. And I think, Ayana, that's where the problems occur. But it's also promising. It's a great time to be alive, where you see these changes, like you said before. But at the same time, there are also some schools that are not budging. And I guess that is where the power in the people need to be a lot more stronger. As I said before, it doesn't happen overnight. But just putting the awareness out there that, hey, you know, my culture looks this way, and unfortunately, we're not going anywhere. So we've just got to compromise or create a new space where my culture can meet, you know, the existing rules of certain cultures that have been in place, and let's just find a way of, I don't know, playing nice. Yeah,
I think fortunately these cultures and your culture are not going anywhere.
Absolutely.
Just one last thing. There's no denial that this oppression exists. We see it in the news, we see it in our everyday lives. Can you discuss why a white person in New Zealand choosing to wear cornrows is problematic?
Yeah, again, that's a very layered decision, and it can be quite straightforward, or it can be quite a critical decision that people might decide to do, and it depends where their motives are. So I can't really, I don't know, I don't have the cultural capacity to answer this question. Personally, my culture doesn't wear cornrows, and I can't necessarily respond from a cultural point of view where my culture doesn't even use it, because that would be called, in a sense, white-splaining, where I think or I believe that I'm the expert of a culture that I'm not part of. So to avoid white-splaining, Ayana, I can't comment on that question. But I do see just the different nuances on how a white person can perhaps take on board some cultural dress or aesthetic dresses from different cultures where they don't necessarily put enough thought into it. Sometimes the dresses or the aesthetic appearance or physical appearance of a certain hairstyle or a certain outfit has got deeper meaning to it that a particular person from another culture doesn't understand. So before, I guess in simple terms, before somebody decides to get braids or to get cornrows, do some personal research into it. Like have a look into what the bigger messages are. So if you walk out there on Queen Street or on K Road, what exactly are the different perceptions that people can pick up from what you're doing? If it's a positive thing, I'm all for it. But if there are deeper roots into a particular hairstyle, then perhaps it's up to your own moral compass to kind of deter away from that. But again, that's up to people's personal preferences. But I would go back to doing your own personal duty of researching that actual hairstyle before you take it on yourself.
Absolutely. And I suppose I should have framed my question how it can be problematic rather than is, because it is up to perception.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you would like to talk about?
You know, what's going on in the world around us and the ties that are dropping from, you know, certain rules, such as what Waititi brought up, that these are all part of a difficult conversation that New Zealand is having, or Aotearoa is needing to have. And these are conversations that Aotearoa perhaps haven't had in a while. But now that it's in and on the table, these are all learning opportunities. So we need to kind of just try to detach ourselves from the spirit of offence and try to leave, you know, getting offended by the difficult conversations to the side, but having fruitful engagement conversations. They're not going to be easy. They will be heated at times. But sometimes we get more offended at these conversations that are necessary, that we don't actually end up solving or finding an end solution.
The Wire.
That was AUT communication lecturer Dr. Janet Tupou.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.